Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's election victory celebration is marred by a suspected terrorist act.
This is quite unfortunate that on the day of celebrating the presidential victory of the president-elect Joseph Boakai, an act of terrorism has been committed against the United Party.
The party of Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko is disappointed but not surprised by the country's Supreme Court ruling on his political future. Experts fear Nigeria's food inflation could worsen a hunger crisis. What's behind the recent wave of violence against women in Eswatini? DRC presidential candidate Moise Katumbi gets an important endorsement.
We were very, very honored and very pleased to see that Prime Minister Makis Antonio recognized the work done in South Africa by the delegates of the main opposition party.
And the White House says it is closer than ever to a deal to release hostages being held by Hamas. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Several persons, perhaps as many as 10, are believed to have been killed last night in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, when an unidentified vehicle plowed into supporters of the main opposition Unity Party. This, as they were celebrating the victory of former Vice President Joseph Boakai in the November 14 presidential runoff election. Unity Party chairperson Luther Tappe tells me that this was an act of terrorism.
Well, I just received a very disturbing call a few minutes ago from some of our party top officials that while our partisans were in a celebratory mood after the pronouncement that our standard bearer won the presidential elections, a vehicle driven by an unknown person ran into the crowd. And what I'm hearing that there's a lot of casualty, about 12 men and 4 women are in very critical condition. This is quite unfortunate that on the day of celebrating the presidential victory of the president-elect Joseph Boakai, an act of terrorism has been committed against the Unity Party. That is so unfortunate.
I know it's late. It's late night now in Monrovia. Do you have any information in terms of where the vehicle was coming from? And did the incident take place at your party headquarters in the street or at the headquarters itself? I know it's too late there, but what do you know?
Yeah, so from the time that the election commissions make the pronouncement to the country and the world, our partisans gathered at the party headquarters on Broad Street, and part of the crowd spilled onto the main street just on the descending hill of our party headquarters where our people have been celebrating. And the vehicle came from the left side and just ran into the people. The driver intentionally off his light and just drove among the people, causing a lot of casualty tonight. And it's so sad that this time of celebration for the United Partisans across the world, we are now in a very disturbing mindset at this point, knowing that our partisans, some of them, I'm hearing some people have died. I cannot confirm that because I'm so far away, I cannot go. And then other officials are not able to reach there. And so right now, I've spoken with one top police officer who also confirmed that some of our people have been rushed to JFK, the medical center, and other clinics around to give medical treatment to the wounded partisan.
Has the president-elect, former vice president, Mr. Boakai, has he been informed?
Yes, as the party chairman, I have tried to reach out to him. He had a very long day meeting people, international people, corporate organizations. And so I tried to reach out to him, but it was unsuccessful getting to him. So I've been trying to get all of the information to brief him very, very early in the morning.
Before I let you go, Mr. Tappe, you are saying that there are casualties, that some people might have died.
I believe so, Mr. Boti, that from what I'm hearing, even talking with the top police officer who just briefed me, that there are people who are in very critical condition, even though he cannot confirm death at this point. But our witnesses on the scene have said to me, Chairman, there are a lot of people who have died. And so tomorrow we're going to confirm that. But this seems to me as a intentional act, a calculated effort to truncate the joyful moment of United Partisans. And after the very heated elections, and to see this terrorist act against our partisan is despicable. It's so much on Liberian, and we hope that the perpetrators will be brought to justice.
Mr. Tapper, thank you so much again. We're very sorry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That was Luther Tapper, the chairperson of Liberia's main opposition Unity Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the opposition Together for the Republic says the endorsement of the group's leader, Moise Katumbi, by a former prime minister, will boost his presidential prospects in next month's general election. This after former prime minister Augustin Matata Ponyo endorsed ahead of the polls Katumbi, a prominent businessman and a former governor of the Katanga region. For more about the endorsement and its electoral impact, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Olivier Kamitatu, the spokesperson for presidential candidate Moise Katumbi.
We were very, very honored and very pleased to see that Prime Minister Matata Ponyo recognized the work done in South Africa by the delegates of the main opposition parties. And that's the reason why I think he decided to withdraw his candidacy and to support Moise Katumbi, the man who has the great, I think, opportunities or capacity to be the next president of the Republic on behalf of.
Okay. Do you think the endorsement will have any significant impact about the electoral prospects of Mr. Moise Katumbi?
Yes, the impact is obvious. The voters in Congo are divided between the great main ethnic and linguistic group. In the Swahili, in the eastern part of Congo, the people are speaking in Swahili, the Swahili language. Matata Ponyo is native from the Kivus, from Maniema in the Kivu. Population speaks in Swahili, represents 45% of the voters. So if we can forge a coalition between all these great leaders coming from eastern part of Congo, and if we can attract also some people coming from the western part of Congo, it's really great impact on the next election. So that's the reason why it was very important. Secondly, Matata Ponyo was prime minister during 5 years of his mandate in the top of the government. So he's not only well known in this part of Congo, but he has also a great experience of the governance and great competence in terms of leadership.
Do you realistically think, with all the advantages of being the incumbent president that Felix Tshisekedi enjoys, Moise Katumbi can defeat him, especially without the support of Mr. Martin Fayulu, who says he won the last election?
But Martin Fayulu won the last election because he got the support of Moise Katumbi. Moise Katumbi was in exile at this period, and Moise Katumbi asked his people from the great Katanga, the great province of Katanga, to support it to vote Martin Fayulu. That's the reason Martin Fayulu got more than 60%. He got during this the last election. Katumbi and also the support of Bemba from Equator. It was not only the popularity of Martin Fayulu. That's why I can say today that Moise Katumbi is very, very popular. All the meetings illustrate his popularity. Thousands and thousands of people are coming just to see Moise Katumbi and to give him his their support. So obviously, Katumbi, with the support of Matata and the other leaders of the opposition, has a large majority in the population.
Olivier Kamitatu is the spokesperson for DRC presidential candidate Moise Katumbi. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty. A member of the party of Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko says the party is disappointed but not surprised by the country's Supreme Court ruling on his political future. The court last Friday reversed a lower court decision to put Sonko back on the 2024 presidential election list and for the case to be retried. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's Pastel Party. She tells me that the government is trying to deny Sonko the right to compete in the 2024 polls.
The party is astonished, but not really surprised, because we knew that there were some maneuvers, you know, to do what they did. And we knew that their only aim is to put Mr. Sonko out of these coming presidential elections, and that would do anything to do so. The first thing they did was, you know, to provide the law. When that decision of the judge from Diganshaw came out, they refused to apply it, which is not normal. They had to apply it. Even if we were waiting for the Supreme Court, it should not have stopped the Directorate of Elections to give Mr. Sonko his sponsorship document. But they refused. So that was breaking the law on their side. So we are not surprised, because we know that they would do anything, normal or abnormal, but anything to reach their goal.
In the meantime, Nafisa, do you know when the sponsorship drive or the petition process will end? Because the way it's going, if it doesn't start soon, perhaps Mr. Sonko may not be able to get his name on the ballot.
If I'm not mistaken, the sponsorship goes on until the date when people start applying for the candidacy to those presidential elections, which is December 10th. So as of December 10th, it would be too late to go get the sponsors and, go and give the files to the court, which is responsible of assessing them.
So Mr. Sonko, let's say his name does not get on the ballot. What would be his plan? Would he support another candidate?
I don't know whether you were aware of that or not, but the very day when they say that candidates are able now to go to that directorate to get their sponsorship document, we sent Mr. Sonko's representatives, but we sent also the representative for five other candidates who are patriots, not as pastors. Candidates, because PASTEF cannot have a candidate because it has been dismantled, so it's okay. But we have other, Sonko supports five other candidates, and they're going under the banner of five other political parties. But we all have the same aim, the same ideal, the same vision. So even if we haven't stopped yet trying to put Mr. Sonko on that list of candidates, but other than him, we have other people who can represent him.
Nafisa, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure,
Jan. Nafisa Dia is a member of Ousmane Sonko's PASTEF party. She was speaking with us from Moncton, Canada. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Millions of people in Africa's most populous country, Nigeria, are struggling with an economic problem that analysts say were caused in part by government reform policies introduced earlier this year. Nigeria scrapped fuel subsidies in May, leading to price hikes in food, transportation, and energy costs. Timothy Obiezu has more from Lagos.
Nigerian roadside food vendor Vivian Nwankwo started her business 4 years ago to support her family after her husband died. But as the cost of food items continues to rise, she says her profit margin has dropped by more than half and forced her to withdraw two of her children from school to free up cash to feed themselves.
You know, say before then and before now, we they manage and they sell, they go. But now things on cost, even for market.
She says before we were managing, but now things are too expensive. She says it is difficult to cope or make profits. People are complaining, and sometimes at the end of the day, I'm at a loss. Even my two children who are in school do not go every day because I cannot provide for them always. There are millions of people like Nwankwo in Nigeria struggling to meet basic needs. The United Nations estimates 25 million people in Nigeria, or about 15% of the total population, are food insecure. Analysts say regional instability, climate change, and inflation are the major triggers of food insecurity in Nigeria. The situation worsened after the government stopped paying subsidies on fuel in May, sharply increasing costs for food, transportation, and energy. Nigeria's currency devaluation is also impacting commodity prices and contributing to overall inflation. Nigerian Humanitarian Affairs Minister Beta Edu says authorities are responding to the challenges, in part, by declaring a state of emergency on food security.
We have lots of interventions that we are putting on the table, and the payment of this conditional cash transfer is ongoing. The conditions attached to it was to see that they invested in their businesses, they ensure that their children go to school. So these are all targeted at improving the lives of people and alleviating poverty. And the third part, which for me is most interesting, is providing fertilizers for poor local farmers to be able to produce the food that we'll buy off from them and sell them as food rations.
According to the World in Data Analysis, Nigeria is among countries with the highest food expenditure, with an estimated 60% of total personal income spent on food. Experts say the situation will worsen if food inflation continues to rise and that vulnerable people will be most adversely affected. The Nigerian Central Bank on Monday indefinitely postponed a crucial meeting on interest rates even as inflation worsens. Analysts say unless something changes, many Nigerians like Wankwo will struggle to get by from day to day. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
What's behind the recent wave of violence against women in Eswatini? According to local reports, six women were brutally murdered by their partners in late October and early November. King Mswati III spoke against the murders and called for peaceful coexistence between men and women. Nonshansha Dramini is the executive director of the Eswatini Action Group Against Abuse, also known as SWAGA. She tells me that her organization welcomed the king's intervention, but the government needs to do more to address the rise in gender-based violence.
We have kind of experienced an escalating rate of gender-based violence in the country. And we've all along been requesting the Deputy Prime Minister's office to declare gender-based violence as a national emergency in the country. But that has not happened. We've delivered petitions, we've had meetings with him, but that doesn't happen. And then recently we had a number of murder cases that were kind of happening, gruesome murder. And the one that really shocked the nation was the one that involves the deputy sheriff, Mr. Mina, who shot five women, each of them with more than one bullet. And four of them died at the same time. And he did this in front of children. So as an organization, then because we do prevention, we do care and support, we were also very traumatized as we were providing counseling and support to these children. Some of them had to see the bodies with some shot on the head. And then within a week of that, like in less than a week, we had another incident where a guy shot his wife again in front of children, and then he also killed himself. With this case in particular, this guy was actually out on bail because he had shot the wife in June, July, and then the gun was taken from him, and then he was out on bail. But he used the very same gun that was supposed to be under police custody to actually kill this wife.
I want to ask you, so why do you think this is happening in Eswatini at this time? Why?
I really don't know why, but I feel it's attributed to post-COVID and post-political unrest because people handle stress in different ways. And then along with that, it's coupled with a high unemployment rate and also the escalating prices of things in shops. So people, I think, are basically frustrated. People are basically angry.
King Mswati III has addressed this issue. I know you would like for the police or the government to get involved. Are you satisfied with the king's response?
I'm definitely happy with him making that statement that he did recently. But I think it's not enough. The government then needs to do something, because by him making the statement, he's kind of setting precedents and giving them a direction that this is an issue that needs to be addressed. So I'm then looking at government really taking initiatives, because that's what we've been complaining about, that government is not doing anything to address GBV in the country, and yet it's kind of become a pandemic in a way. So I'm quite happy. But then the statement on its own is not enough.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Okay, you're most welcome. Thank you.
Nonshansha Dlamini is the executive director of the Eswatini Action Group Against Abuse, also Nua Swaga. She was speaking to us from Johannesburg, South Africa. The White House says that it is closer than ever to a deal to release the more than 230 hostages being held by Hamas, but that it did not have an update to share on Monday. The White House also reaffirmed that the U.S. does not want Israel and Hamas firefights at Gaza hospitals. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Singh reports from the State Department.
With reports that a deal appears close at hand for Hamas to release the hostages it has been holding since its October 7th massacre of 1,200 Israelis, the White House said it is working on winning their release hour by hour, but did not have any news of an agreement to share Monday. As another Gaza medical facility, the Indonesian hospital, has come under Israeli attack after the Shifa hospital last week, VOA asked the White House about the attacks on hospitals.
We don't want to see hospitals as battlegrounds. We don't want to see firefights in hospitals. Now, as we've also said, at least when it comes to Al-Shifa, I don't have any intelligence on this Indonesia hospital, but at Al-Shifa, we did have intelligence that corroborated the Israeli claims that Hamas was using it as a command and control node.
Kirby said he knows the hospitals are full of sick patients unable to flee and doctors and nurses trying to take care of them. He said the problem for Israel is trying to balance that reality with the fact that Hamas uses hospitals as shields for its fighters. VOA spoke with the chairman of the Mercy organization in Jakarta that built the Indonesian hospital in Gaza.
They attacked the third floor. The ICU is a mess. Many victims, more than 700 severely injured, 12 dead, including two doctors, a surgeon, if I'm not mistaken.
President Joe Biden has said that after this war ends, Gaza and the West Bank should be run by the Palestinian Authority and not by Hamas, which has been designated as a terrorist group by the United States. One expert told VOA he thinks Biden has some important ideas to share, but there is no consensus right now in the region or even between the U.S. and Israel on the day after the war ends.
The U.S. also saying that there may be some sort of regional Arab force that helps police Gaza for some time, and hearing from most of the Arab foreign ministers, including Jordan's foreign minister, rejecting that notion. So there's a lot of work to be done here, both on the short-term crisis of hostages and the violence that continues, but also the longer-term vision of what is a viable end state look like.
Biden has come under increasing criticism at home and abroad for his support of Israel, amid growing outrage and desperation over the mounting death toll of Palestinian civilians. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says more than 13,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israel since the war began last month. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
And that's it for this Tuesday, November 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butting, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.